Welcome to the Legacy Podcast. This podcast is a series of conversations centered around understanding the values, beliefs, and intentions behind leaving a legacy. You will hear from successful business owners just like yourself who want to leave an impact for generations to come. Let's get started. Welcome to the Legacy Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Dio, and today I have a very special guest who I've known for a couple of years now. It's Ken Siegel with LGA CPA and Business Advisors. Now, Ken is the managing director of the Business Advisory Division along with Investment Banking Services. Ken, thank you so much for being here.
It is an absolute pleasure, Paul.
Now, Ken, for those of you that, for the audience members that doesn't know the ins and outs of your story, share a little bit about what you currently do now, and then further on, we'll go into how you got here.
No, thanks, Paul. Yeah, what I do now is I'm a partner within LGA. I manage its business advisory service and investment banking, as you say. So what we do is we provide consultative services for companies throughout their life cycle. And then oftentimes we help solve the riddle through investment banking. And we can get into that. That sounds kind of mundane. But, you know, the long and short of it is where I got today was from about 30 years of performing different functions within banking, capital markets, syndications, and investment banking. And what we kind of came to the determination is that there's a lot of mid-sized companies that are lacking a real seasoned practitioner to help them along their path in the life cycle, whether it's helping them through risk and value or helping them through raising debt equity or selling the companies at an optimal value.
What do you feel as though LGA and the business advisory team does better than most other advisory, quote unquote, advisory teams?
That's a great question. As you know, the viewers will learn is that I had my own practice that I started about 4 or 5 years ago. And the reason why I started it, and it's a long-winded path to get to your answer, is that there really is a void in the market for the sort of products that we provide. From a pure personal perspective, several years ago, I encountered some health bumps and I had generated a lot of success, a lot of revenues for a lot of people. But when you go through a series of health bumps over a short period of time, it gives you that jump off point to say, okay, you know, you don't know what your long-term time perspective is. You start measuring things in shorter increments of time and you say, am I happy with what I'm doing? And I always felt that there are some unresolved business of really doing something on my own and leaving an impact. So about 5 years ago, I started my own consulting and investment banking practice, had left a larger entity, 2 kids in college, 1 in private high school. And guess what, honey? You know, I'm starting my business because it's been my lifetime goal. That's the discussion. The long run, it turned out to be a great decision. So what I realized was, and why I think it's been so successful, is that mid-sized companies aren't getting that sort of expertise. They may have an advisor that knows accounting. They may know someone that may know something about how to attract capital. You know, different avenues of life cycle management of companies, but very few have the experience that I bring and that my practice brings that covers all these points under one roof. So what was exciting for me is when I started the company, you know, the phone starts ringing, and that's great. Over the course of 3, 4, 5 years, the phone's ringing to the point that it's a high-class problem that I advise my clients on is what do you do when you're growing too fast and how do you build the infrastructure? What are you thinking about exits? And it was really exciting that, you know, I grew into the position that it was time for me to find an exit. And by going to a place like LGA, you couple the implicit experience that we have between the deal side, the investment bank, and the consulting. Now, oh my gosh, we have certified valuation analysts. We've got accountants. We've got CPAs. We've got outsourced management accounting, fractional CFOs. So all of a sudden, there's this arsenal that I was growing very well on my own. And now under this broader umbrella, I really think it's unpeered, at least serving the middle market companies like we do. That's what makes it so exciting.
Now, one of the benefits of having your own podcast is you get to ask questions of people that you know that you've always wanted to ask. And the one thing that I wanted to ask you is, out of all the things that you're doing, what do you enjoy the most about it?
Perfect example. We have a very, very large client that we've done a lot of work for. And he called me on Friday his sister is thinking of selling her business, and she really doesn't understand whether it's the right path, if it's the optimal path, and he's concerned that she's not going to make the right decision. So we started working with her 2 days ago, read through some information, spoke to her yesterday, and basically in an hour and a half's work, we convinced her that it was not the right time to sell, was not the right deal, and she would forever regret it. So that's the sort of thing where it's great to convince people to do deals, but I find it more impactful when you really validate the deal's not worth being done are sometimes the most impactful ones. So that's gratifying that someone thought of me, that a family member had a need. It wasn't a big need, but we solved it. And hopefully she's going to make the right decision for her, her family, and her business just based on a very short period of interaction. To me, that's what gets me up in the morning, is really helping people with the problems and providing clarity that has a long-term benefit.
Yeah, because if you were a compensated just as a business broker, or if the deal actually happened, your advice may have changed versus in that situation, it's whatever was the best decision for that person at that time. So very cool.
1000% accurate. Yeah. Whenever we have a lot of stakeholders around a table and we're advising our clients, you know, to harken back to the Woodward and Bernstein, as we say, follow the money, understand everyone around the table and what their motivation is. And just because someone's a business broker, an investment banker, doesn't mean that they have, you know, the worst of intentions. It just means you have to understand what gets them paid. Mm-hmm. And for this, it was so gratifying. And we do a lot of very complex things that are a lot more heady and technical than that. But just the thought of coming in and truly providing value, and you know it's going to have a lasting impact, that's awesome.
Where was your head at when you were going through those, the mental issues? Like what was your thought process as you had a few health scares?
Well, what happens is I was in a position where I was managing a larger entity. I was farther away from the clients, which I hate. I love being in front of the clients. And when you have, you know, depending on who's counting, 3 or 4 major health scares in a very short period of time, that makes you think, okay, how am I going to spend the rest of my life? What's going to be my legacy? Do I want to continue to work under other people's umbrella? Or you've always felt the need that you could be successful if you do it on your own. And, you know, rather than playing it safe, I figured this is now or never to jump off and truly prove what I can do. And that's what's so gratifying is, you know, I didn't leave anything on the table, but it's, believe me, it's scary as all heck when you're starting it because you don't know what other factors are going to come into play that are outside your control. But when you really kind of get the thing going and you create enterprise value and then people are interested in actually buying it, integrating in other entities, I mean, it's that satisfaction of really creating something. And our clients appreciate it that they know that, you know, I have the ability to survive in the wild and to take the same risk that they take. And unless you've really been at that table with that level of sleepless nights, anxiety, worrying about everything you have to worry about, it's hard to convey that as a true, you know, compassionate consultant and practitioner unless you've been in their shoes. So, like I like to tell the clients, if there's an anxiety hat to be worn around the table, I've probably worn it. But it's extremely gratifying rather than saying what could have been. I built something and I'm incredibly proud of it.
Now, as I've got to know Ken over the years, the thing that really stuck out the most was how much of an agent he is for his clients and how much he just goes to bat for them. So can you just share a few stories or a story where, you know, a client was in a dire situation and you were able to bring them up by their bootstraps and get them out of the situation?
Yeah, no, there's one example which really comes to mind where back in the crash of 2007, I was called in by an accountant to see a client. The company had gone from 10 million to 2 million overnight when the market crashed. They were tied to real estate. The accountant says, these guys have 30 days to live. Find a path for these folks. You walk in always hoping you're going to find a path. But, you know, we immediately got the company's cost containment under control, which is really putting Band-Aid on an open wound. The biggest issue they had is they had a very large amount that they owed to a bank, and the bank was playing rough. So having grown up in banking, I kind of knew that this bank was probably acting a little rougher than they should be. So long story short, without hiring attorneys, we actually got the bank to forgive all the debt, which, if banks don't always act in the correct manner, sometimes it has to be brought to their attention, and they acknowledge that they did some acts that made the company's demise even more likely. So by them forgiving the debt enabled this company to grow. Right now, they're sevenfold larger than they were before the crash of 07. They're worth probably $20+ million. Now we're helping them on an exit. So that's a company that, all for all likelihood, they were absolutely, you know, ready to be shut down and go away. And by aggressively acting on their behalf, understanding the risk and taking control of that negotiation, you know, it's had profound impact on this client who's still a client 15 years later, and their family and their family. And it's just extraordinarily rewarding that you can actually help in situations like that.
That's amazing. 10 million to, I can't even imagine 10 million to $2 million in 1 year. How do you even, how do you even begin to fathom that type of lifestyle change?
And he was a newlywed. And he was a newlywed at the same time. We'd literally just been to their wedding a year before the crash. So imagine a newlywed going through that stress. And, you know, I'm so proud of the company and the management that, you know, not every company listens. When things are stressful, companies aren't always at their best, particularly with folks like me. But they were calm, cool, and collected. They did the right thing. And it just makes it so rewarding, where the pandemic's been a perfect example of that, where there's a big shock that hits the system. And some of the clients that you think would naturally step up didn't as much. And some of the quiet ones that you thought would have more issues, they stepped up. And it's really interesting to see how people really respond when things are at its most tense.
Now, over your long business career, if you were to look back at your decisions, what major decision would you consider your best decision?
Well, the best decision is obviously being insane and starting my own company on the heels of health issues, two kids in college and one in private school, but they had the crystal ball. Yeah, that's the most rewarding one. But I'd say the best decision I made was probably the best decision I didn't make, meaning that I learned long ago when I was first started in business, I went through a bank credit training program where there was literally, you start with 30 people and you end up with like nine. It was like, you know, it was extremely competitive, extremely cutthroat, and it was very difficult. And at the end of the day, you had to find an opportunity within the bank of where you were going to stick. And I made the mistake then of going to a group that I wanted to go to as opposed to the group that wanted me. And what I've always kind of followed ever since that time is go where you're wanted as opposed to where you want to go. So I kind of learned the best decision by the mistake I made back then. And the fact is, you know, at the time, it was very early in my career and it didn't have a lot of, you know, ensuing collateral damage, but it really taught me to really focus on the people. And you see that with clients, where I find that like people attract like clients, where I'm very compassionate, caring to a fault, and really think like a shareholder. And because of that, I attract colleagues like you, Paul, and like a lot of our clients. So we try and get like-minded folks that truly want to collaborate, are willing to, you know, trust and kind of go through a process together. It's really rewarding.
And in contrast to that, what would you consider your worst business decision?
My worst business decision, I'd say the worst business decision I've gone through, and it's something you learn from, is on the investment banking side. Like you said, you're paid on success. So everything you do is based on time at risk. And, you know, most investment bankers, they're happy to have a batting average of, call it, over 500, where more than half the deals they work on close. And I view every decision for an investment banking deal that doesn't close as a failure, because it means that there's something that I should have identified, whether it's acceptance in the market, something in diligence, or something along the way that I should have realized in order for what impeded success on that transaction. And I totally realize that a 50% batting average is awesome, gets you in the Hall of Fame. But, you know, I still beat myself up on what could have been done differently, either to have success or, you know, the other things that I wish I could have changed is you do have on the consulting side situations where you clearly see a path that a client needs to take to get to the promised land, to get to safety, to optimize value. And it happens all too often that clients don't necessarily understand, appreciate, or take that path. And it's not a matter of me saying, my God, they should listen to me. It's what have I done to not be able to convey effectively why this is such an important step to take? Mm-hmm. And it could be something as simple as a company taking the wrong strategic path, not taking the right capital partner, having a mismatched alignment with the debt they need. But they're operational things that you know are going to be risks, and that when they don't take the advice, they're susceptible to incredible risk that could take down their companies. And I always say, what could I have done differently to articulate why this was so important? And you never forget that. But those are the disappointing ones where it's probably like a doctor telling somebody, you know, stop eating Big Macs and start exercising, and they don't. And you say, what could I have done differently to get them on a different health path? Yeah, those are the hard ones. And those happen from time to time. And I blame myself, not the client. I should have done something better to convince them. Mm-hmm.
Now, back to the topic of the show. When you think of legacy, what do you think of? And what type of legacy do you want to leave?
It's a great thing. I actually call it my opus, is that as I was growing my consulting practice, when you're building a company, first you start at that initial stage of, okay, am I going to survive or not survive? And then all of a sudden you realize probably a year after you're well onto survival, what's my cruising altitude? And you get higher and higher. And all of a sudden it's like in a Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where you're starting to, you know, you're not worrying about shelter, food, clothing, and you start worrying about other things. And you reach that point where it's like, you know, my God, you know, this thing is working. It's growing. This is so satisfying. The phone is ringing. Okay, now what do I do? I advise my clients on how to optimize value, how to have an exit. I'm not doing any of that stuff. Okay, so now what do I do? So the most, when I think legacy, and which is why I sold to LGA, which again has been an awesome move, is that the legacy is my practice, all my, you know, institutional knowledge, my technical expertise, my financial engineering, my models, my material, all that's been moved to another entity. And now I have a staff of 10 that I'm teaching the tricks of the trade, teaching them all the technology and the application, so that I know that, you know, hopefully when I get to retire, play golf or do whatever at some point, you know, my life's work is now being cared for by the next generation. And that's something that I didn't have before when I had my own company. So, you know, I am so excited to be teaching my team. And as you know, in your career and in my career, oftentimes you have bosses that don't want to share names, don't want to share technology. They're very close vested. I'm the opposite. I want everybody to learn because I've got so much I want to teach and get everyone be able to fish on their own. It's exciting. So when my staff can do something, it's like, you know, 6 months ago, you needed my help. Now you don't. That's gratifying because now I'm building something that's going to go well beyond me. And I joke with our firm. I mean, Arthur Anderson was an awesome consulting firm years ago, and they built this little consulting company. Who knows where it goes? Will turn into Accenture. I mean, isn't that cool that we're creating something now in an awesome accounting firm? And who knows where it's going to go? And it's not necessarily me that has to drive that. I'm building the infrastructure. I mean, that's legacy. Again, I call it opus, you call it legacy, but it's that's what gets me jumping out of bed in the morning very early to come into the office.
Well, I see it. I see it on a daily and weekly basis. And I appreciate you having you on the show. So Ken, where can we find you?
Well, you can find me in Woburn, for those of you, you know, it's Woburn, but because we're in Massachusetts, we have to mention towns oddly. Yeah, our town is Woburn, right on the 128 Beltway. We're in the Cummings Park. We seem to be everywhere. We've got clients really globally, from, you know, Asia to Australia to all throughout the United States. But LGA is based in Woburn, and you know, we'd love to talk to anybody and anybody that would love to learn more about what we do.
All right, great. Ken Siegel, LGA, thank you so much.
Thanks, Paul. I really appreciate it.
If you'd like to learn more about Ken and LGA CPA and business advisors, please go to www.lga.cpa. That's www.lga.cpa. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Legacy Podcast. Now, if you can do us a favor and leave a review, any type of stars on any platform that you use, it would be greatly appreciated. For more information about us, the other co-hosts, and the Legacy Podcast, go to businesslegacypodcast.com. That's businesslegacypodcast.com. Have a great day.